Today we're going to look at the women in the Jesus story, the story of the resurrection. We're taking some time between the resurrection and Pentecost just to sit in the stories of some of what happened. And today we are looking at the women. That's what Luke calls them, the women. In his initial mention of them making their way to Jesus' tomb, that's all they get. He eventually gets to naming names, but when he does, it seems that that's almost secondary to him. One of the things in biblical studies that you note is the more important someone is, the more likely they are to have their name included. And so the fact that he kind of balks at saying their name says something about his perspective on their role. But despite them being secondary to him, he can't avoid their presence. None of the gospel writers can. In every single one of the gospels, the initial announcement about the resurrection of Jesus is given to women. Matthew says that it was given to Mary Magdalene and then someone he refers to as the other Mary. That's all she gets. Mark names Mary Magdalene. It says Mary, the mother of James, and a woman named Salome. Luke doesn't say who is at the tomb, but tells us that Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and several other women told the disciples about Jesus' resurrection. John tells the story a little bit differently. In John's telling of the story, Mary Magdalene found the empty tomb and reported that Jesus' body was stolen. Only later, as she is weeping in the garden around the tomb, did Jesus himself appear to her and show himself to her. Today, as we celebrate and honor the women among us, we pause to note the women in the resurrection story. Mary Magdalene, Joanna, and Salome, and Mary, the mother of James, the other Mary. It seems like a good idea to celebrate and honor the women who are around Jesus, because quite frankly, they weren't particularly honored and celebrated in the story itself. They're mentioned, but not much more than that. But it's interesting because these are the women who, as Jesus made his way to the cross, they stuck with him when all the men ran. But it's a challenge to celebrate the women because we know very little about them. So that's the first thing I just want to note about the stories of the women around Jesus' resurrection is that the women were largely sidelined by the men in both the story and the action. This isn't just true in the story of Jesus' resurrection. It's true throughout the Gospels. There's consistently women in the story, but they are consistently treated as secondary characters. Apart from Mary Magdalene's story in the resurrection, her role in the resurrection story. Now, let me just ask, how many people have heard of Mary Magdalene? Most of us have. In church tradition, she's become very well known. In the Gospels, the only other thing we know about her is that she had 7 demons cast out of her. Everything else, like the idea that she was a prostitute, that's hearsay. That's not in the Gospels. That's, this happened, and so that must be that person, but there's no indication of that actually being the case. She's just not mentioned that often. Some have said that she's the woman who broke the oil over Jesus. There's a lot of conclusions drawn that aren't specifically in the Gospels because the Gospel writers didn't actually care enough about them to write about them. Most of the women in Jesus' story are not named. Now, the other Mary that's spoken about in the resurrection narrative, she's identified by her relationship to men. She's known as the mother of James to Luke. In Matthew and Mark, she's the mother of James and Joseph. Either way, her identity marker is the sons that she bore. The same is true of Joanna in terms of being known by her relationship to men. The only other thing we read about Joanna in the Gospels is in Luke 8, where we read that she is the wife of Chuza, Herod's business manager. It seems that through her husband, she has access to privilege and wealth. In fact, that Luke 8 passage where she's mentioned, many of the names that are mentioned are there because Luke says that these are women who have access to money, and they are using their funds to sponsor Jesus and his disciples' work. So they're important enough to use for what they can provide, but not important enough to talk anything more about them. They seem to have little intrinsic value beyond what they can give to the disciples and the gospel writers. Salome, the other woman mentioned around Jesus' resurrection, she's just not named anywhere else. Just kind of a passing name in the story. Now, John does talk about someone being present around the cross. It talks about Jesus' mother's sister, so Jesus' aunt, being with the other women while Jesus is crucified. And some traditions have suggested that that is the same person as this woman, Salome. But that's something that the gospel writers didn't think was even important enough to clarify. Now, some might object that their audience would have already known who these women are, so they didn't need to. I would push back by just pointing out that the earliest probable date for the Gospels was probably 40 years later, so there was lots of people involved that would not have known them. And the Gospel writers go out of their way to name all of the disciples, to talk about who's whose brother and who this dad is. They talk a lot about the men, and they don't talk about the women. Seems more likely that the reason the women are sidelined in the narrative is simply because they're women. They're secondary citizens. Even in legal contexts in that day, they aren't seen as reliable witnesses or important contributors. It's clearly evidenced in the response of the men to the good news of the resurrection that the women shared. I'm just going to read from Luke, starting at chapter 24, verse 1. This is when they heard the news and brought the news to the men. Just notice how the men respond. But very early on Sunday morning, the women went to the tomb, taking the spices they had prepared. They found that the stone had been rolled away from the entrance, so they went in, but they didn't find the body of the Lord Jesus. As they stood there puzzled, two men suddenly appeared to them, clothed in dazzling robes. The women were terrified and bowed with their faces to the ground. Then the men asked, "Why are you looking among the dead for someone who is alive? He isn't here. He is risen from the dead. Remember what he, that's Jesus, told you back in Galilee, that the Son of Man must be betrayed into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and that he would rise again on the third day?" Then these women remembered that Jesus had said this. So they rushed back from the tomb to tell his 11 disciples and everyone else what had happened. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and several other women who aren't bothered to be named, who told the apostles what had happened. But the story sounded like nonsense to the men, so they didn't believe it. That's their response. The women hear the testimony of the angels, and they don't just accept it. They put the pieces together. I love that. They remember what Jesus had said. They were listening. They were paying attention. The pieces start to click in their head. They are doing theology work, saying, "Oh, yeah, he said that, and that means this, and that means this, and that means he's alive, and we've got to go tell the disciples." And they don't just report the news. They're actually teaching them. Remember what Jesus said. This is what's happening now. They're posturing themselves because they've been sent by Jesus. They're posturing themselves as teachers. They're putting the angel's words and Jesus' words and present reality together. And in response, well, the story sounded like nonsense to the men, so they didn't believe it. Now, in defense of the men, patriarchy was the way of the world 2,000 years ago. There were perception about women and their intelligence and their place in the world that it was the water that they swam in. They could not get out of it. Their responses made sense in the cultural context they lived in. But that makes the second thing we need to note in this story that much more significant, is that while the disciples and even the gospel writers kind of moved the women to the sideline. Jesus did not sideline the women. In fact, they were chosen by Jesus to be the first ones to hear the news of the resurrection, to be reminded of what he had said. They were the first ones chosen by Jesus, really, to be his first apostles. Now, they're never named apostles in the Bible. The term apostles was limited to the men who were considered the primary first messengers of the good news of Jesus. But as important as Peter and James and John and Thomas and Matthew were, they were actually secondary apostles. It was the women that Jesus first entrusted with the good news of the resurrection. John's telling of the story is powerful because in John's telling of the story, Jesus actually shows himself to Mary Magdalene well before he shows himself to the men. He trusts her. He trusts the women with the good news when society around them generally did not view women as reliable witnesses, simply because they were women. I saw a comic recently that you know, it's not really tongue-in-cheek, because it seems to summarize the men's response to how things played out post-resurrection. I think we have it here. If you can't read the bottom, it says, so, ladies, thanks for being the first to witness and report the resurrection, and we'll take it from here. Sadly, this response seems to have been fairly typical throughout much of church history. Jesus consistently has shown himself to those society considers second class, to the vulnerable, to those considered weak. He welcomes them and comes alongside them and reveals himself to them and values them and honors them. And then those with even a little bit more power and privilege, because the disciples, let's be honest, they were not people of power and privilege. They just happened to have more than the women. Those with even a little bit more power and privilege, you know, if we hear those people that Jesus has first showed himself to at all, we take what they receive and then kind of pass it along ourselves rather than helping others to hear the voices of those that Jesus has shown himself to. I wish I could tell you that we're past this. You know, we're beyond patriarchy now, right? But society is not, and the church is not. And too often our posture looks more like the men who were rooted in a system that was not healthy than it does look like Jesus. Too often we don't choose the way of Jesus towards people in our society who are considered second class, to those who are vulnerable, to those who are considered weak. And on Mother's Day, it's good for us to name it towards women. Stats would suggest that there are women connected with Covenant who are treated to this day as less than in their homes. Based on the testimonies of women, many women pastors, I want to clarify, Elise has never told me anything or complained about anything, but I am confident, based on the stories I have heard from many women pastors, that she had to deal with comments and criticism that Glenn and Brian and Paul and me have never had to deal with, simply because she was a woman. I know that I still struggle to receive women in a manner that reflects Jesus, because I was raised in a church context that clearly taught me it was rooted in patriarchal ideas and structures. And so it's an ongoing struggle to move out of what I was taught into the way of Jesus. But it starts by acknowledging that the way of Jesus was not the way of everybody else around him. He trusted them and said, you know what? You're going to be the first to hear, the first to know, the first to put this together, and the first to tell of my good news to the world. Each and every one of us collectively needs to wrestle with whether we're going to follow the way of the disciples and just accept the way of the culture and world around us towards those who are considered second class and vulnerable, or if we will follow the way of Jesus. Jesus saw the women. He welcomed the women. He trusted the women. He commissioned the women to be the first to testify to his resurrection. He showed us what their place should be in the story. The question for us, especially for those of us who are men, is, will we follow the Jesus way? That leads me to a third observation that seems significant to understand and celebrate the role of the women in this story. That they didn't get commissioned just because they were women. The women were in a place to be commissioned as the first apostles because they were close to Jesus, because of their proximity to Jesus. This is something that all of us need to hear. It seems when you read through the Gospels that Jesus called the women who were around him because he saw and he affirmed their value as people, even if others around him didn't acknowledge it. These women received his affirmation even when others didn't give it to them. But then these women stayed close to Jesus even when everyone else fell away. This is a profound thing, right? Because the men promised that they would never fall away. They would never desert Jesus. In Matthew 26, before Jesus goes to the garden to pray before his arrest and crucifixion, he has this exchange where Peter promises Jesus, even if everyone else deserts you, I will never desert you. He insists that even if I have to die with you, I'll never deny you. And then we're told that all the other disciples vowed the same. All the men made this promise. We're never going to desert you. But by the time Jesus gets to the cross, the only people who were with Jesus before that are still watching and with him then are the women. All the men have fallen away. The women are close. They are watching. They are grieving. They did not leave him behind. And it's the women who stay close, and because of that closeness, they're at the tomb as soon as they can be to care for his body, even though they know there's going to be soldiers there guarding it. Their closeness to Jesus is what puts them in the place to receive the message of Jesus and the commission to share it. If they hadn't been close to Jesus, they wouldn't have heard it then either. Each one of us has contexts and places in which our voice is available to be heard. We need to address the ways that we perpetuate silencing people that need to be listened to. We need to think about those things. But also, each one of us needs to think about the places where we can speak and we can share. And we need to think about what we are speaking in those contexts. And if we're going to share the Jesus story well, if we're going to share the way of Jesus well, the message of Jesus well, we need to stay close enough to him to be there to hear the message he has for us. That's what these women did. That's why they were in that place. It wasn't just because they were women. It's because they stuck close to Jesus. And that's really the invitation here for all of us. Will you stay close to Jesus so you can hear his heart for people, so you can hear the good news and how it's breaking into the world, and so that you can hear his invitation say, okay, go tell this, go show this, go share this. That's really at the heart of it, as they stuck close to Jesus. And that's really the ultimate invitation. Will you stay close to Jesus, whatever comes? I have a couple final Mother's Day thoughts, but before we do that, let's just take a quick look at the word cloud. I'm going to download it and drag it in there. One more time, we'll look at it. There we go. That's the updated one? I'm looking. There we go. Lots more. Never resting. Self-sacrificing. Intergalactic. Somebody's mom was out of this world. It's awesome. Supportive, dependable, dedicated, patient. Awesome. Kind. That's great. On Mother's Day, as we've talked about, you know, the women hearing and sharing the message of Jesus, I can't help but think about the incredible opportunity that mothers have to be a first messenger of Jesus into the lives of their kids and their kids' friends. The incredible opportunity that women have to extend the affirmation of Jesus to others who are vulnerable and to honor their value in God's eyes. And doing that well comes as you stay close to Jesus yourself. You know, in one sense, I have zero envy for mothers. You think about motherhood. You care and you nurture and you over and over again give pieces of yourself to kids who, by the very nature of their brain development and experiences, lack the capacity to understand it or express gratitude because they still only see themselves as the center of the universe. Motherhood is about, like, you work to create safe spaces for kids. And then because they feel safe, because you work so hard to make it a safe space, they let out all of their anxieties and angst and stress against you because you've done such a good job at making it safe and take a beating. Oh, the best moms, pour yourselves out into the lives of kids, knowing that the purpose of it is so that they can live well without you. I don't envy mothers. You know, I listened recently to a podcast with an author named Susan Cain, who wrote a book called Bitter Sweet. In talking about the book, she described the tension between the bitter and the sweet things in life, the beautiful things and the hardest things, and how often the most beautiful things and the hardest things show up together. And as she reflected on this, I couldn't help but think about how this is absolutely true about motherhood. And so, mothers among us, biological mothers and adoptive mothers and surrogate mothers and spiritual mothers, mothers who have lost, mothers who ache, mothers who, despite your longing, do not have a child of your own, mothers-to-be, mothers who are in the slog of diapers or hormones or goodbyes or trying to figure out what it looks like to mother adult children, or who are now at the place where your children are caring for you. To each of you, to all of you, we say thank you for the myriad of ways you reflect the heart of God to us, for the countless ways you love us, for continuing to stumble into the ways of grace and doing the best you could with what you've had. We are grateful for you. We love you. We salute you. May you know the affirmation and the invitation of Jesus today, that he sees you and he welcomes you in and he longs to be close to you, and may you find rest in his love. Amen.